The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, the 15th of November. Stick it in the diary, folks. That is when there's going to be a general election, by all accounts. And in advance of that, Sean Defoe, our political correspondent over the last few weeks, has been looking at all of the big parties and where they stand on policy and everything else. He's looked at Fine Gael, at Fianna Fáil, at Sinn Féin. Sean, who are we looking at this week?
Today you've given me the unenviable task of trying to tell Labour and the Social Democrats apart. And it's been a bit like, do you remember those little spot the difference things you used to get as a kid with the identical photos and like just what's missing from this other photo? A bit like that.
Okay, right. Well, much like we did with the other big parties we've mentioned, let's go through then the main kind of policy areas, and we will start with the big one, housing.
And this is one where, I mean, talk about spot the difference. They are almost identical in what they have been calling for the last while. So Labour and the Social Democrats, they will say that there is a bit of difference between them. Ideologically, they're almost the exact same. There is very, very little in it. But when you look into specific policies that are announced at the moment, and I put the asterisks in, that they are currently writing their manifestos and guarding those manifestos very So there will be individual little small bits that come out in the course of the election, whenever that actually happens, that they are just... So you keep it very close to the chest or focus grouping at the minute to the side.
Wait to see what the other guy's doing. Slightly different.
Exactly.
Slightly different.
We'll add an extra bit onto the targets or whatever.
They said 12, we're doing 13.
Well, it's almost the exact same. So for Labour, set up a state housing construction company, build 22,000 homes a year for social and affordable. So 12K social, 10K affordable. Social Democrats also 22,000 social and affordable homes a year. Okay. Labour calling for a 3-year rent freeze and a ban on no-fault evictions. The Social Democrats calling for a 3-year rent freeze. Evictions. Both of them want to regulate and clamp down on short-term lettings, and both of them have a target of in around 50,000 homes a year by Labour, say, building up the construction sector through things like better pay for apprentices. But as we heard on Pat Kenny earlier, actually, that's a bit of a difficult thing where some apprentices are dropping out, and getting that workforce is another thing. So when it comes to housing, I mean, virtually identical proposals from the two parties.
All right. Okay. So identical at the moment, or virtually identical. But look, I know before they get in touch and people from the parties giving out and saying that they are radically different, we do, and Sean has already added the caveat that we haven't seen the policy documents in great detail, or the manifestos in great detail, but it is hard to know how you're going to create great difference between both parties given what you've told us there. What about health?
Yeah, health is one where there's a couple of small differences, but broadly they're coming from the same area. Make it more accessible, make it cheaper. So if you look at the Labour manifesto or the Labour alternative budget from the last few years and what they've put in, they have it under a care section of the website. Not healthcare, but care.
All right, okay.
General care and looking after people. Access to healthcare when you need it rather than being on a waiting list. They want to put €1.5 billion of extra money into the health budget on top of what's already there across current and capital spending. And this idea that we often hear from the left-wing parties and from other parties, creating an Irish NHS, holding up the NHS as this sort of standard, even though it has quite a few problems itself.
Yeah, I know.
Need to get.
There was a time maybe 15, 20 years ago where that was a better thing to brag about than it is today.
And then there was,
people listening to this, they would experience the NHS thinking, have you tried to get a GP's appointment in the NHS?
And they will say, well, a decade of Tory management and now we've got Labour in the UK.
So
I could write it for them.
Yes.
So there you go. Similar enough with the Social Democrats. Healthcare as you need it, when you need it is the slogan that they have for it. But their whole thing on healthcare is pretty much sláinte care. We helped write sláinte care. Roisin Shorthall was the grandmother of it, if you like. It was her brainchild. And you just need to invest in that and get it back properly on track, because it is way off of track for where it's meant to be. I think sláinte care is actually meant to conclude in 3 or 4 years or something like that. For a 10-year plan that sounded like this great reform of the health service, it sort of zipped by without a lot of that happening. They also say they'd put 10% of the total health budget towards mental health. So much bigger increase there in the mental health side of things and how they look after people, increasing wages in the sector, fully implement and fund sláinte care. And then one of the big differing points actually is when it comes to childcare. So both want to make childcare more accessible and more affordable. The Social Democrats in their last alternative budget say that they wanted to cut the cost of childcare by an additional 30% on top of what the government is doing, whereas Labour wants to create a fully public, universal public childcare system, a state-funded model where early years workers will be paid directly by the state instead of this subsidization of the childcare providers out there at the moment, which we have seen a number of childcare providers pulling out of in recent days and weeks. And they say their vision is a universal public healthcare system where all children will be guaranteed a place in a service close to their home.
Okay, so there are some differences there. The 10% towards the mental health budget, is there a suggestion that you take that out of the budget?
Well, this is where it wasn't clear, right? So do you do that by just adding to the budget?
Say 24 billion. Say 24 odd billion is the health budget. Taking 2.4 billion of that now and spending on health?
No, well, then you're going to cut elsewhere. I think it's already, is it in the region 1.5? I can't remember the exact figure that's
there
at the moment.
But you top up the difference from what's already spent, or are you increasing spending?
Yeah, that's something that wasn't 100% clear immediately.
Okay.
But I would imagine it is adding on to the health budget rather than saying, but either way, you are making it a much more significant part of it. And I suppose the hope is that by increasing that, by increasing access, you potentially avert worse outcomes later on.
Setting aside the financial aspect of it, I mean, it's absolutely a perfectly laudable thing to aspire to, and we should be spending more money in mental health. But then you can't set aside the financial aspect.
But this is it. But it does also seem like a very big chunk of the budget for mental health. Yeah. And there's so many other things with health. But
What have you done? We've done health. We have done housing. What about climate?
Yeah, climate is an interesting one. And they both actually have a couple of interesting ideas on this. With the Social Democrats, they want to create a 5 billion euro climate fund and set up a semi-state company that would invest in offshore wind. This is one that I'm surprised kind of hasn't been gone at by the Greens a bit more. And I remember interviewing Eamon Ryan about it. Like, all of the offshore wind is going to be built by private companies.
Yes. The state
isn't going to own it at the end of the
day. No, we have these auctions and private companies bid.
Which, I don't know, to me it just seems a little bit mad. We're pumping all this money in. It's going to be in our waters. We're talking about becoming the Saudi Arabia of wind energy. But the state isn't going to own any of
it. Sorry, Aramco is the big Saudi oil company, and it's the Saudi oil company is the point. And then Statoil, or whatever they call it now, that has mined for all that oil off the Norwegian coast, again, is a state company, effectively. And all of that money has gone into a sovereign wealth fund. And it just, it's a little like kind of Corrib and Shell and everything. It just strikes me as absolutely mental. I'm with you that we are kind of taking this massive natural resource and we're kind of selling access to it as opposed to accessing it ourselves.
And at the end of the day,
I know there's an upfront cost, but I mean, surely the benefits would be massive.
Pay it, borrow it. You know, borrowing is harder now. When we were going for some of these auctions, the rates were much, much cheaper. They could have borrowed it. And of course, these private companies would be setting the price of wind. So if the whole idea is we're generating it literally for free, well, without the capital costs up front, it's still going to lead to expensive. Mm. So they're saying a semi-state company invest in offshore wind, roll out solar panel delivery to 100,000 homes a year. So put the panel on the homes. That's a big thing from Jennifer Whitmore. She really is about get panels up, subsidise them really, really heavily, make it cheaper. Create a transition fund for farmers to the tune of 1.5 billion euro and introduce a 1 euro off-peak fare across public transport to encourage use. So they didn't put set hours on it, but say, you know, before 7 o'clock in the morning, after 10 a.m. and excluding that 4 to 6 zone, maybe your fare would be just a euro. Encourage you to do that.
All right. Okay.
Off peak.
So that's the Sock Dems when it comes to climate. What about Labour?
To pick up on the public transport thing, they want to try to copy what was trialled in Germany with the 9 euro monthly ticket for social welfare, which I think a lot of people would like. And then more money for retrofitting solar panels, public transport. And then interesting one, a citizens assembly on agriculture and food production is something that Labour would like to see. So instead of this whole row between the government and you have to have these climate targets and whatever, set up a citizens assembly, have it come up with different recommendations, which you can take the cynical view and say, well, look, a talking shop on it, or another more holistic view of we're bringing farmers into the room, having the discussion with actual people as well.
Right.
Should we go?
So listen, what about the prospect of a Social Democratic and Labour Party? Or some version of it. They shoot it down, but you know, like everything you've said there, I mean, there'll be people listening at home thinking you're kind of describing the same party.
Yeah, it's where's Wally, but one's wearing a white and red and one's white and blue, sort of a stripy or white and purple stripy jumper.
Not even sure. One's wearing red and white and the other's wearing white and red.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Look, the talk of a merger is one way. It's from Labour. And it's from, you know, you hear it and you read it a lot in the Irish Times and you read it a lot from the likes of Pat Rabbit and whoever saying, yeah, we're the same. We should absolutely have a merger. Social Democrats are not on for a merger.
Yeah.
They're just not on for it at all.
Well, I guess they're the more upwardly mobile party in terms of popularity, are they?
Well, interesting that you say it because they would have been seen before the local elections and they did double their seats to about 36. But then Labour held all but one seat. You know, Labour did a lot better in the local elections than people thought. And I'm looking through some of the guides now ahead of the general election and looking and saying, actually, there are areas where Labour are in with a shot of a fifth seat.
Yeah.
Are in with a shot of...
So you know this. You'd be talking to them kind of behind the scenes. So you answer this for me. I get the sense sometimes that the reluctance partly from the Social Democrats is that despite Labour's shortcomings when it comes to elections in recent years, there's still a kind of a big operation that exists behind the scenes. Mm. There's still all that legacy And that means that a merger means that the Social Democrats are more likely to be the one that gets gobbled up.
Yeah.
That well, you find on local level at the kind of the common level, if we were talking about Fianna Fáil, you know, at that level that you'll find it will become Labour dominated.
Yeah, there definitely is a sense of that in that there is an old guard in Labour, and whether they're still running for election, they pull the strings, and that all your man's family is Labour through and through, and they'll
yeah.
the selection.
And the Soc Dems just don't want anything to do with that.
No, well, the Soc Dems would say, look, they are much more attractive to new people coming into politics. And when you look at the likes of Holly Kearns, who wasn't even a councillor 5 years ago and is now the leader of the party, it's a lot easier to be more upwardly mobile, to get onto a ticket and for new blood to come in. And they also, you know, they would say when it comes to the idea of a merger with Labour, judge people what they do when they get close to power. And while a lot of the policies were similar, when Labour had the chance and they got into government, they didn't do what they said they would do or didn't hold to policies of the left. Labour will say, look, different time, greatest recession in the history of the country. We had to do certain things we didn't like, and you make compromises yeah. that we paid for.
So is it fear of toxicity from the Social Democrats? That Labour brand in some areas is still toxic.
It is still toxic, and they don't necessarily want to be associated with it. But remember, a lot of Social Democrat people are people who might have joined the Labour Party in the past and who now don't trust them. And if you're looking at someone who's my generation, which a lot of people in the Social Democrats are, like, they tend to be a younger voter base, mm-hmm. younger candidates, councillors. Like, what did I know growing up with the Labour Party? I know they went into government, they went reversed, Rory Quinn reversed his plans to cut college fees, actually increased college fees. When you look at the dole for young people, that was cut by Joan Burton for the under 26s as well. You know, it was very hard on that generation that was coming out of college at that time, which is where a lot of the Social Democratic people are. So I've talked to people in the Social Democrats who say if there was a merger tomorrow, they'd leave the party. They wouldn't stay in.
Right.
And then you have this argument that will be made that if you look at the Labour and the Soc Dems and Greens, you're talking, what, somewhere around 12% of the vote combined?
Yeah.
And the argument is, well, that's a very significant block. But the assumption being made, and this is something that the people in the Soc Dems push back on, is that that would automatically transfer over to a new party, where they're saying, look at what happened to Democratic Left and Labour back in the day. They merged and it didn't lead necessarily to a bigger party.
Yes.
Just, you know, they got subsumed into it and didn't have the overall results. So that they're better off maybe cooperating in some sort of a coalition in the future government and doing a deal like that, but that a merger just isn't on the table.
How will they do in the election?
I am still totting through, but I would have a bit of fear, more fear for the Social Democrats than I would have before.
Right,
so you're looking at Roisin Shorthall and Catherine Murphy. They're both leaving the scene. Very loyal personal votes that they would have.